Welcome to the Water Podcast. This is episode 25 and today is Friday, June 19th, 2009. Water is tool for testing web applications. You can find more about water in episode 1. My name is Jelko Filipin. With me today is Dave Hoover of Safari Water. Hi Dave.
Hey Zoko.
And also, for the first time, I have a co-host. Hi Greg.
Hi Zoko.
Greg Yoves, right?
That's right.
I mispronounced your name the first time I said it in a podcast when I used your music.
That's okay, everybody does.
I didn't really know how to pronounce American names. Hi Dave. Would you tell us a few words about you? What do you do in life?
What do I do, like, just for my normal day-to-day job?
A few words asking? About you in general, and then, yes, what do you
sure.
do?
In general, I live in Chicago, in the Chicago area, in, west of Chicago, and I work in the city, and generally, I am these days a Ruby developer, and a husband and father of three.
Of three?
Three, yeah, a lot, yeah. and that keeps me very busy. I work for a company called Optiva, O-B-T-I-V-A, and I'm a partner there, and we're a small consulting company, and I tend to work on a lot of small to medium-sized Ruby on Rails projects these days. And about 3 years ago, started getting into water and Selenium and really enjoyed water and how easy it was to set up. And was presenting on water and Selenium at RailsConf 2006 here in Chicago and realized that no one in the Ruby community at that time was using a Windows laptop. 99% of the people at the conference was using Macs. And I realized, hey, maybe there's an opportunity to get some people using water if we could run it on Safari. So that's kind of where Safari Water started.
I think I've read that somewhere. Dave, I have a question from Charlie Baker.
And sure.
He asks, what about the Water API compelled you to write a new browser driver for it, Safari Water?
What I liked about I think the water API is, and I'm not super experienced like Charlie is with this domain, as far as just like, I know he's this, I think he spends a lot of his time in this domain as far as the cleanest, most efficient, productive ways of testing web applications. But from my experience using Selenium, and this was back in like 2005, using Selenium, and then at the same in that same year learning water just felt so clean to me, especially since it's just a Ruby gem, whereas at the time Selenium was pretty complex to get set up in a system that allowed you to write your tests in Ruby. I honestly don't know how hard it is these days. I'm sure it's gotten simpler. But you really can't get any simpler than installing a Ruby gem and just going and being able to drive a browser using a pretty, as far as, one of the things I really like about water is that the API is intuitive and it kind of has the philosophy that Perl has, which is make simple things simple. And hard things possible. So, I think there's a lot of extra stuff that's been added to water over the years to make kind of some of the edge cases possible, like clicking modal windows and all sorts of crazy things that people need to do. But the base, like, happy path cases of, like, clicking a button and submitting a form and clicking a link are, like, super simple. And, like, you literally just do it by installing the Ruby gem and writing a couple lines of code.
Water is really simple for simple cases.
Yeah.
You said at the beginning that you saw that nobody of the people you were at the conference had a Windows machine, so you tried to port Water to Mac. Do you have any plans to port Safari Water to Windows?
No, I don't right now. I mean, right now I really honestly don't have a ton of time for Safari Water. development. I'm really looking to see if there's people out there who'd be willing to contribute. I moved it to GitHub, and I definitely some activities picked up as far as people forking it and contributing to the project. But it really needs somebody leading the project that can that's actually using it on a daily or weekly basis at least. And most of my time right now, I'm not testing things using a browser, or I'm not the applications that I'm developing don't really require that level of that level of testing. So right now, I definitely am not planning to port it to Windows. I honestly wouldn't even know where to start how to do that, because the really nice thing about porting it to, or just getting it working on the Mac, is it was fairly straightforward as far as once you kind of had the strategy, which is use a Apple Event Bridge, which I use RB app script, which just basically lets me from Ruby send events to the Apple OS, and Safari gives you a hook to inject JavaScript into the browser programmatically. And from there, you pretty much are trying to drive the browser the way Selenium drives the browser, which is via JavaScript. So I have no idea how one would try to accomplish the same thing, or if the code would even be reusable on the Windows version, since you wouldn't have that bridge anymore.
Does it have to be another technology for the Windows?
Yeah, I would think that would have to be its own separate project, or at least in the sense that Firewater is a separate project, and Safari Water is a separate project, and Opera, you know, it just needs to be another implementation.
I don't know if I forgot to say, but the question about moving Safari Water to Windows was from George Sanders.
Okay.
Thanks, George, for the questions. Greg, are you still here?
Yes, I am.
You can ask questions, please.
Okay.
Don't be shy.
I was going to ask Dave real quick. Are there anything... I had a couple of questions. I'm kind of writing them down as we go. But are there any of your Rails-based applications that you found in particular that have a problem that you can't control with the Safari Water? Any particular web objects, Ajax objects, stuff like that?
Just to be totally honest, I really haven't used Safari Water in development on my projects much at all over the last couple of years. It really was...
Okay.
Most of my time with Safari Water was spent just kind of getting it working. And most of the time I spent with it was in 2006. After RailsConf, and I, you know, just kind of had an itch I wanted to scratch to see, you know, to see if it could be done. And at first it was just this big kind of spike. It was just like, hey, let's see if it's possible. You know, it's kind of an interesting thing to try. And I got it working, and it was really slow because I was using like backticks. I wasn't actually using an Apple Event Bridge. So every single call to the browser was going kind of through the command line. But anyway, so I got the Event Bridge in place, and then it's just been like small tweaks, and people have, you know, pinged about questions through the mailing list and stuff, and I've just kind of contributed through the years, but mostly my role has been as a developer and not a user, which is probably not ideal, because I don't feel the same pain that anybody else does, and I'm not going to be as proactive about finding things because I'm not using it the way they are.
Right.
So.
Okay. Well, so do you have any idea what the usage is, I guess, compared to water for IE? I mean, water,
numbers, you mean? Like how many people? Oh, I would. Well, it's definitely picked up. I mean, when I first wrote it, I think it got a little bit of interest, but mostly it just kind of sat there, and people would pick it up, and it was such an alpha, like almost pre-alpha software. There's definitely a lot of quirks to it, and things that are just rough edges. But Some of those have gotten smoothed out over the years, but there's still definitely some limitations if you could try to compare like the functionality of Safari Water to like standard Windows IE Water. It's like, I gotta imagine it's like has about 1% of the, you know, the users. But definitely over the last year, it's, you know, as I guess it probably tracks with, you know, just the browser market shares.
I was going to say, as Macs continue to grow popularity, I know moved to a Mac last year, and so it's become more interesting to me too.
Yeah. So, I mean, I know as just normal, the kind of the standard population starts using Safari more, like as just your standard, you know, computer user is buying an Apple versus a Windows machine. I think interest will grow, but also I think it's more quickly going to come to pass that people want to use Safari Water because they're a developer and, you know, they just want to be able to use a clean API, and Safari Water happens to be the easiest one to use.
Yep.
But it definitely, yeah, I mean, but I wouldn't be surprised if people are out there trying to use it and getting some strange behavior out of it and finding some limitations.
Sure.
Dave, how easy is to install Safari Water? Is it as easy just as Jim installed Safari Water? Nothing else?
Yeah, that's all you have to do. What that'll do is it'll actually grab the RB app script gem a lot. Like if you have the latest version of Ruby gems, grabs the dependencies automatically. So I think it works that way. But anyway, so that should just grab the other one that it depends on, the Ruby event bridge or the Apple event bridge. And that should work just by saying gem install Safari Water.
Great. I think that's really important. Firewater has a lot of problems with installation because it depends on the add-on, and lots of people have a problem with that.
Yeah, I mean, I remember back in 2006 during that same conference when I was trying to teach people about water, I got a super super early version of Firewater working on my Mac, but it was pretty insane trying to get it to work, and it was super slow way back then. I'm sure it's much faster now.
Yeah, I think it's faster than Water, but I'm not sure.
Okay.
It was really, really slow at the beginning. I remember that installing Firewater Alpha. I remember at OTA 2009, earlier this year in Austin, you ran water unit tests against Safari Water, but I think you didn't tell us what percentage of tests passed and how many failed. Do you have any rough numbers?
Oh, I think most of them failed. I think from what I could say, I just wanted to see if I could get it. I just wanted to understand how to do it in the first place. But I didn't want to, like, and once I saw that it was just like complete failure, like as far as getting, once I saw them running, and that it was, most of them were failing, I was like, oh, okay, well, that's good to know. And so Jeffrey Frederick looked into that, and I was helping him with that and giving him some pointers. And then I think he submitted a patch to the project so that if you go to the GitHub README, then you'll see the like how to get it running. So I mean, it's kind of sitting there waiting if somebody wants to try to get Safari Water passing the water unit tests. But I think there's definitely some work to be done there. But that would be if somebody wanted to like take over the project, that would be the place to start. You know, as far as getting it under tests and stuff, because it's always just been this prototype that didn't die for me. I wrote some kind of, I guess you could call it just like sample baseline tests that would exercise the code and go out against like websites that were just like publicly available. But that those And that I just used that to make sure I wasn't introducing like regression errors. And I didn't have a good idea for how to test it using unit tests at the time. But those have become out of date because, of course, those websites have been updated and stuff. Getting those water tests in place would be the right way to start.
I think I saw that how to set up a water test for Safari Water at GitHub when I was researching for the podcast. And also, when we exchanged mails before the podcast, I got an impression that you're looking for somebody to take over the project, as you said before.
Sure. So
you were already talking about the technology that Safari Water uses. What would you say? What should somebody that would take over the project should know?
Mm-hmm. A couple
hey,
things.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, go ahead.
Can I add to that?
Yeah.
I guess, I don't know if Zilka was talking about this in particular, but someone who's relatively new to the Apple OS, if you wouldn't mind touching on the Apple Event Bridge that you were referring to and maybe how that compares to the COM interface that Water uses.
Sure.
Yes, please. I didn't understand
that. Yeah, you bet. I'll describe how the code is structured right now and then where the Apple Event Bridge comes in and then where I think, I mean, if somebody got excited about Safari Water, and I do think if it could catch up to Water as far as just functionality and stability, it would be very useful. I just honestly can't work on it right now just because of so many other things take vying for my attention. But as far as the way the code is structured, it's really just split in two. I wanted to the way that IE was structured back when I started Safari Water, it was, you know, kind of like all in one big file, right? All the COM stuff was like written right into the, you know, button class, right? Like if you wanted to click a button, you'd go and see the Win32 stuff in there. And I was hoping when I first started Safari Water that maybe I could use like the object model that I could reuse the object model that Water had, but at the time it was all kind of mingled together. So I just had to kind of start from scratch, definitely trying to reuse the same names of the classes and inheritance hierarchy of that Water was using. But I tried to keep anything that is like an implementation detail about how we're actually talking to the browser behind this little interface called a scripter, which the standard class for that is I call the Apple scripter. And so pretty much there's this kind of the Safari Water file, and that pretty much just contains all the front ends, like the objects that you're dealing with when you call text field and it returns an object. And there's really not a whole lot of logic in there, and it's all the messy talking to the browser stuff is in the Apple scripter or the scripter RB file. And in there, it's mostly, I mean, that there's a lot of code in there, and some of it's pretty hard to look at because it's actually mostly JavaScript code that's being generated by Ruby. There's actually very little, I'm not really using that Apple Event Bridge much at all. Because almost everything, because I don't have, like, the, I think the way the COM stuff works for the IE version of Water, like, you actually have, like, a programmatic interface to clicking on a link, or it's like it wraps the whole DOM of the browser. And so it kind of makes sense the way Water code base was structured at the beginning, because there's like a one-to-one mapping between, you know, a button and the thing that you're going to be messing with down underneath the covers in order to click a button. But in Safari Water, you just have kind of one entry point into the system, and that's through this like do JavaScript method on the Safari object in the in the event bridge interface. So there's really just like this one method that everything runs through, and the rest of the methods, as far as like clicking on a link or clicking on a button or selecting a drop-down list, is all JavaScript code that gets jammed into this do JavaScript method. So there's really not, a couple other things are a lot simpler. That event bridge, there's a couple other places we use the event bridge if you need to kind of do the sort of things that are really difficult in IE, like for instance, like checking, like clicking a, clicking an alert box or clicking some random, kind of OS native dialogue window, or like the SSL warning window, because there's like an accessibility. I don't even know what it's called really, but there's like the whole Apple OS is kind of scriptable to a certain extent, and that's the one special feature that. And if you want to be able to like click an alert box or things that are difficult to click or kind of manipulate through JavaScript, you have to be able to, you have to go into your system preferences in OS X and enable the accessibility option. And that makes it possible for, you to like click on pretty much anything using, programmatically using this Apple Event Bridge. So that's been nice because a couple times I knew it went back at the time, at least, Water was having a hard time getting a hold of certain things that happen in the browser. It was really pretty straightforward in Safari to get those things working. As far as somebody taking over the code base, the nice thing about GitHub is, the code base is just under Red Squirrel, Safari Water, and somebody could fork that. And mine isn't necessarily the authoritative version, right? It could just be somebody else's becomes the new version of Safari Water. And one of the things that's possible is to actually, I think, get rid of that Apple Event Bridge dependency, because newer versions of the Apple operating system actually ship with a native Ruby Apple Event Bridge. So there's a possibility of just kind of ripping that dependency out, which would be a little bit more elegant. Possibly creating a wrapper for generating that JavaScript and not having it just be tons and tons of copy and pasted JavaScript strings sitting in a Ruby file.
Greg, did you have a question?
No, I was looking. I actually just went over to GitHub and was checking out the code. Have you tested Safari Water on the latest version of the Apple OS 10? I think it just came out a couple of weeks ago.
I haven't tested it on that, and I haven't tested it on Safari 4 yet either. But I believe with Safari 3, okay, it's pretty happy.
Greg, are you talking about macOS 10.5.7?
I believe so. I'm checking right now. Let's see, running 10.5.7, yeah.
You can run unit tests for yourself. Dave, if I got it right, so somebody who would take over Safari Water should be pretty good with JavaScript, because there's just a little Ruby code that actually generates JavaScript, right?
Yep, that's true. The nice thing is that it's pretty similar to Selenium, so you can use that as a reference. Whereas Selenium has, and I definitely dropped in and just went and peeked at Selenium and how they were dealing with some quirky Safari stuff, back in 2006. The nice thing about Selenium is that it's a cross-browser implementation for testing, so they've had to deal with the JavaScript quirks between, Firefox and Opera and Safari. And so you don't necessarily have to reinvent the wheel. But at the same time, you definitely do need to understand JavaScript. And there's plenty of Ruby in there too. I mean, to try to remove duplication out of that data or out of the code base, I've had to do some dynamic method invocations and I've used some method missing, I think, in there once or twice. So there's definitely some Ruby code in there. There's definitely some JavaScript code in there.
Greg, you just please come in with the questions. Don't be shy.
Okay. Dave, correct me if I'm wrong. You guys at Optiva do kind of a unique style of development I was watching one of your videos on the website about mentorship.
Mm-hmm. Apprenticeship.
And, apprenticeship, thanks. And just wondering how your book's coming along, and I don't know, this isn't exactly water related, but perhaps you'd be willing to apprentice somebody who would take over Safari Water.
That's a good question. So a couple questions in there. Let's see. So yeah, started writing a book about apprenticeship back in 2005. I just started writing about it in 2005, and it kind of slowly turned into a book. Similar to Safari Water, right now I'm not actively working on that book, but my co-author, Adewale Oshinye, who lives in London, works for Google, he's working on it. I worked a lot on it in the beginning and over the years, and just recently I've kind of left it to him to kind of see it through to the end. But it's coming along. I think a lot of the ideas are, I think the community is kind of ripe for them. Whereas maybe a year ago we weren't, because I think the software craftsmanship movement is kind of growing is gaining kind of a critical mass. The book is about basically helping somebody who wants to be a lifelong developer, get a good start and find mentors and, figure out how to kind of get from being a novice to a competent kind of journeyman developer. As far as if somebody were to want to take over the project, I think what I really would love to do is definitely, provide any insight or oversight that I could. I definitely have time for IM conversations and occasional phone conversations and emails and stuff. I just don't. But as far as investing development time, that's where I'd be limited. At least, yeah, I really am pretty limited right there right now. But
yeah.
I'm not abandoning it, and I wouldn't want to just, if somebody was interested in, getting my take on things, as they've ramped up on the project, I would love to be a part of that, because I really enjoy watching people go from, starting with a limited knowledge of something and turning into an expert on something. It's kind of one of the things that gets me excited. So,
yeah, I really like that approach too, as far as how training folks to come fill your shoes so you can move on and do more exciting things, and at the same time help somebody else increase their skills as well. So.
Yeah, and it's not that I want to go on and do more exciting things. I actually need to start doing less exciting things.
Like you just have the same problem.
Less at the same time. so that I could do more mundane things like be awake for my family and stuff.
Right. I'd like to actually finish something once in a while.
Yeah, that's good too.
So have you heard about the fact that Watercraft is dissolving, and how do you think that will affect Safari Water?
I did hear about that.
If at all.
I did hear about that on Twitter. I didn't like dig too deep into what was going on. I wasn't like super shocked, because it seemed like Brett was just, there was just a lot on his plate when we were together at AWTA. And it seemed like they were struggling a little bit to kind of figure out what they wanted or how it was going to work. But it's disappointing because it just seems like there's a lot of water is an awesome API, and it's there's a lot of people using it out there, but nobody's quite figured out how to get it over the hump as far as funding its development. I guess people could have seen Watercraft as like the savior of water and like how it's gonna pull all the different browser implementations together under one banner, which is kind of what's needed. So
that's kind of what I was alluding to.
Yeah, it's definitely not gonna impact Safari Water because you know that wasn't really. Nothing and Watercraft really hadn't impacted Safari Water as far as I know directly yet, other than okay. indirectly just kind of raising the consciousness about it, about water in general. But hopefully there's more attempts like Watercraft, you know, in the future.
Yeah, it would be nice to have kind of everything in either a single package or a single place people could go.
Absolutely. It's just a matter of, it really is going to take a pretty concerted effort to make that happen.
Mm-hmm. I have two questions from Charlie Baker. You've done a lot of work on the software craftsmanship movement. How do you, if you've thought about it, think apprenticeship applies to other disciplines such as QA?
That's a good question. I don't actually know how to say his last name. I think it's Matt Husser, it's Husser. And he's in the testing community and is also part of the Software Craftsmanship mailing list and is definitely part of the Software Craftsmanship movement. We just announced recently the Software Craftsmanship North America Conference. And we saw this and we, you know, released the schedule and Matt was, you know, mentioning it'd be great to get hear from some testers. And, anyway, so in the sense of like the software craftsmanship community and the testing community, I have a hard time figuring out where one begins and the other ends as far as Matt kind of sees it as, hey, well, you know, definitely software craftsmen, people who are kind of these generalists have a lot to learn from testers because if you're going to be a generalist, you better know how to test. At the same time, if you're a tester, you have some decisions to make. Do you want to, become a generalist and start getting more into development? Or do you see it? I mean, or do you see yourself as a tester, and that in itself is a craft, right?
And I'm sort of,
which I definitely think it is. But there's definitely also a place for people to be generalists and kind of be good at both, right? I mean, Brett Petticord is definitely a good developer, and he's a good tester, right? Or world class of both, you know. So, I mean, I would think that like anything or like any kind of new profession, which I think software development is still a very new profession, where I, in general, like school-based education has a super hard time keeping up with the developments in the industry. Apprenticeship is going to have a place, right? It's going to be hard. You're going to be hard pressed to find an education that's going to prepare you to be a super good tester on day one, right? You're going to have people that did get some pretty good education, got some good theory, but then once they get on the job, there's a lot to learn. And so I think for jobs like that and programming itself is very similar. You can get some good theory at schools, and some schools are more practical than others. But even then, it's so difficult to keep up with what's going on that on the job, you know, pair programming or pair testing with more experienced people is the best way to learn. And I think, you know, I think that's true for testing as well as for development.
I would agree. I'm really surprised that it's not more formally run in organizations when new people come in to have someone experienced work with someone who's new. I think that's just the best way to learn and other professions.
Or even to have someone like a tester go work with a developer for a while and actually maybe like kind of what I'm doing now, which is jumping in and writing unit tests with JUnit, which, you know, kind of promotes that generalist that you were talking about, Dave.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense.
I have another question from Charlie, also related. I'm not even sure, maybe you've already answered. How do you think QA fits into the software craftsmanship movement?
Yeah, I guess I kind of touched on that in my previous answer. As far as I can't believe I don't know how to pronounce his last name and I'm having a hard time with it, but Matt Huser, he just wrote a really interesting blog post in the last week called Boutique Testers. Kind of making a parallel between a company like mine, Adaptiva, or a company like HashRocket or Relevance, or, you know, a lot of different small, you know, 20, 30, 15 person boutique software development shops. And what shops like that mean for testers? Like, is that, you know, do these sort of generalist sort of shops where entire projects are done with two or three people and all three of those people are wearing all the hats? They're doing the, you know, maybe they're not necessarily doing the super beautiful front end design, but they're doing all the HTML, they're doing all the database design, they're doing all the object model design, they're doing all the testing. And Matt, I would definitely recommend reading the blog post, because he makes an interesting point that, you know, there's going to be certain contexts where you need a professional specialist, a tester, and they're going to drop in for a few days or a couple weeks of, you know, like intense exploratory or just kind of specialized testing that only a professional tester would know how to do or would have the expertise to do, or you need that outside perspective, right? Like one of the problems with having testers and developers pairing with each other is testers kind of go native and maybe lose some of the perspective that testing teams need to have as far as like kind of attacking code base. They're attacking a system instead of being a developer on the system, where you start getting attached to things and start getting short-sighted or kind of too close to it. So there's just a lot of dynamics there. And there's also just such huge differences in contexts, like the context of a tester in as a boutique kind of software development situation is wildly different than one in a huge development organization that has hundreds or thousands of developers and needs to be able to have, you know, hundreds or thousands of testers to keep up with the amount of code that's getting cranked out. But I guess in the context of software craftsmanship, that is generally more focused on small teams and kind of smaller boutique-y sort of situations. And for that, I would definitely just recommend reading Matt's blog post and kind of commenting on it and thinking it through. It's really, he really phrases it as more of a question. Is this, you know, the future of testing?
Just to comment on Dave's thought that the testers sometimes get too close to the code and get attached to it. Well, it never happened to me. The more I know about the code, the more I know how to break it. So,
okay, yeah, that was that was really more kind of speculative. I don't have a ton of experience watching testers get too close to the code. I really like the few situations I've been in where there's a formal testing team. they really haven't been interested in getting too close to the code. But
I've seen it quite a bit.
Although I've always wanted them to try.
I'm just trying with my developer also an experiment. I've set up a virtual machine with developing environment, and I'm trying to fix some trivial bugs and their program with the developer, like some typos and stuff like that, but just to see how the project is developed, how the code looks like, because it's a C# .NET project and I'm working in Ruby with Water, so I have no clue how it works inside.
And sure.
I think it's good for a tester to know how the technology he or she is testing works from the inside, so you have more knowledge how to break it.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Just two more things for the end. I've asked all the questions that are priority one. One question is for Dave and the other is for Greg. Let's start with Dave. What's with the red squirrel? I see it all around your GitHub account, Twitter, your page.
Okay, so red squirrel comes from college. Kind of. Let's see. So my... It comes from right after I started teaching myself to program. This is back in, like, I guess 2000 or early 2001. My younger brother and I decided to try to start, like, a side business to develop websites together, because he's a designer and I was trying to be a developer. And so we had to come up with a name for the company, and it was so we ended up with Red Squirrel because we both have red hair, or ginger hair, as people in the UK would say. For some reason in college, my nickname was Squirrel. So, and which kind of had to do with when I, we won't go into details, but we'll just leave it at that. Like, so in college, my nickname was Squirrel. So that's where Red Squirrel came from. And I just kind of held on to the name because it ended up in a lot of my URLs and screen names and stuff.
Yeah, I see it all around, and it was really unclear to me how it's related to anything. It's a good name. Maybe we should talk about it over a beer once.
Yeah. Well, actually, that gets into the background of the nickname, actually.
Okay, we'll talk.
I had a feeling.
We'll talk about it sometime later.
Yeah.
And Greg, when I was introducing you, I forgot to ask you to say a few words about yourself.
Oh, well, a software automation. I was a test manager and decided, I guess, kind of like Dave, I was more of a developer and moved myself into a test automation position here at my current job. So that's what I'm doing. And started working with Water, and specifically Water and Rasta, I guess in the last year, to build a framework and test harness to drive our web applications. And now I'm kind of moving into continuous integration as well. And that's a lot of fun. And also getting into the unit testing side with a JUnit on our Java platform. So I'm definitely kind of doing what Dave was talking about, moving kind of into that sort of gray area between developer and tester. And I'm really liking it. I think that's where a lot of testers should consider moving to, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, I think knowing how to code is really important for testers.
Well, as you know, also, I write music, I write songs, and that the artistic thing there, I'm seeing sort of working in the development world as well. And just recently started working on iPhone applications with Objective-C and Cocoa Touch, so doing it all right now.
For the listeners of Water Podcast, maybe the name Greg Yost is familiar to you because we played his music, I don't know, probably five episodes. I'll have to count it later and edit myself.
Yeah, I'll be expecting my royalties from that.
Yeah. Let's say it this way. I'll split with you all the profit from the episodes where your music is played.
Perfect.
Let's say 50-50. I think that'll be fair.
It's better than I get from the record label.
Well, I'm sure. Okay. Greg, Dave, do you have any closing thoughts for the podcast?
No, I'm good.
Greg?
Well, thanks. Thanks, Ilko. Sorry for having a scramble here at the end. I kind of jumped on at the last minute. Appreciate you having me.
Oh,
yeah. I mean, it was definitely a great talking to you guys. I think the water community is full of really great people, and I'm looking forward to seeing what happens with all these different browser implementations.
Me too.
Is everybody coming to the Lone Star Ruby conference?
I'm not.
One of my coworkers is, but I'm not.
Okay.
When is that?
Jake Scruggs is coming from Optiva.
When is the conference?
We'll look for him. I believe it's the last weekend in August, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday.
No.
In August. I don't have the dates.
I'll try to get to the next Austin workshop on test automation, but that's probably it for my US travels. Thanks, Dave, for talking with me, and thanks, Greg, for jumping in and co-hosting this on very short notice. Like, can you start recording now?
Right, that's what it's all about in this industry.
Thanks a lot. Thank you for listening to the Water Podcast. Please leave a comment at waterpodcast.com. I really like to read your comments. I would like to thank my team, Tiffany Fodor and Alan Baird, for all the help. More information on waterpodcast.com/team. My site is jelkofilippin.com. Dave, your site?
I guess I'd say my site is redsquirrel.com/Dave.
And you have a Twitter account?
Yep, twitter.com/redsquirrel.
And Greg, your site?
Most of my stuff starts at yosbrain.com. And on Twitter, it's just yos.
Okay, so people know where to find you. The podcast is licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution 3.0 Creation License, and I'll try to put all links in episode show notes. Thanks.
Talk to you later, guys.
Yeah.
Thanks,
talk
guys.
Later. Bye.
That was fun.
Bye, Z.
This episode is sponsored by Eddie Lewis and BBC Worldwide. Music in the podcast is a Red Squirrel theme song by Colin Harris.